Wowie, wow. We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's going to be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit, you're
welcome
a scrumper.
Welcome to the club.
Welcome to a club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com. Wowie, wow! We're here with an NPR style of your Wild Edible World podcast. Thank you so much for joining. I am one of your hosts. My name is Michael.
And I am Steve at normal volume, just to make Michael seem awkward.
A little self-aware. Thank you.
Just kidding. We are here in our local library with Mr. Brad Ernest, wetland scientist, shade of brown wearer extraordinaire.
Yeah, absolutely. The fantastic corduroy top, or it's like a corduroy style.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
Welcome to the podcast, dude. Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Yeah. We're really excited to, you've provided or prepared a lot of talking points to like some of the services that you've provided and give us a lot of people, all our listeners, an idea of what it takes to remediate a lot of the land. And so, okay, first let's like, you gave us a little bit of a quip about what you do for your job. Inform the listeners as well, please.
Sure. So my official title is wetland scientist, but I also do such other functions as I'm a state certified arborist, designated erosion control inspector, and I also do permit and plan reviews for different municipalities where wetlands and other special management areas like rivers and streams are involved. I do pre-construction site work, doing environmental mapping, wetland investigations, things of that nature. During construction, I'm on site doing inspections, making sure there's no sediment runoff or pollution leaving the site. Everything is stabilized and contained within the work area. And then after construction, I follow up with yearly inspections, making sure that in areas where there are necessary environmental protections, that everything's being carried out according to the maintenance and management plans as far as the establishment of native communities where they were impacted.
Wow.
Doing like slug counts and stuff. Like there's at least 6 slugs per square foot. That's a good amount of slugs. That's what I imagine.
No, they leave that to the volunteers.
Yeah. Fortunately, my work with quadrats is limited. In the industry, we like to call it a meander survey, which is this really fancy term for I walked around and looked at stuff.
We're really good at that.
Aerial ocular observation.
Ooh.
Yeah. Looked at the ground, saw some things.
I need to write this shit down.
Yeah. Make it sound real.
This
cool.
is gold. Not even 3 minutes in and you're dropping some knowledge, Brad. I love it.
Yeah. The industry terminology is phenomenal.
Yeah. I'm going to need you to email me a list of these things so I can use them.
Yeah. So that's, really fascinating work, really important work too. Really admire it. But this is a foraging show, so let's get a little bit of that out of the way first. So like what's something that you're, what was your favorite thing you foraged last year?
Oh, geez. Last year is 2023. It's, it's too early in the year. I keep referring back to like 2022 as last year.
Oh, yeah.
Admittedly, I'm a little embarrassed. My foraging game is like not very strong.
Yeah. No, last year was a weak year for me, I will say.
I tend to stick mostly to mushrooms. Mm-hmm. When I can find them. I've foraged morels, oyster mushrooms, different job sites, and I actually have a tree in my front yard that flushes oyster mushrooms.
Hell yeah.
And since it was like 50 degrees last week, it pushed out a flush of king oysters and
nice.
It's pretty crazy. They got real melty real fast though, so I didn't end up grabbing those. But
those temperature changes will get you.
Yeah, no kidding. Cool. A lot of mulberries and raspberries.
Nice.
Yeah, makes a good field snack.
Heck yeah, we were just talking mulberries and raspberries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, listeners, we're trying to develop our super secret third hot sauce summer edition, but more on that later. Do you have a memory of the very first thing you ever, like the very first plant you ever ate or from the wild?
Yeah. So when I was younger,
or mushroom.
Well, yeah. So when I was younger, my grandparents lived in Iowa, like pretty far out in the country. I mean, it was a town of like 500 to 700 people, a one stoplight kind of deal. And they had some land with a barn and a horse pasture and stuff. And out behind the barn, there were these huge mulberry trees. And so ever since I was like really little, my cousin and I would go back there and we would just eat all the mulberries.
Perfect.
We always had this idea that we would like harvest a bunch and like, you know, do something with them. But when you're like eight, like,
you just put them in your mouth.
Oh yeah. Stuffing, cramming them in the, yeah, in the mouth for sure. that was probably one of my first foraging memories too. I mean, mulberry is a really big common denominator that I think brings a lot of people together. So that's fun to hear that you share that as well.
We used to throw them at each other as kids.
Nice.
Yeah, like here's a couple to eat. Here's one that's going to stay in your clothes permanently.
Awesome.
You know, like that sort of thing.
Oh yeah. And who doesn't love berries? You know, it's hard to miss.
You are correct, sir.
See, I had a similar game, except it was with acorns, and we called it Chuck because we were chucking them at each other. It hurt.
Yeah, it sounds awful.
Yeah, children, you know.
Yeah, the imagination of children. Yeah.
violent tendencies.
Come to think of it, we used to throw just about everything at each other.
Yeah, right? What?
Yeah.
Soft, hard. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
It was a projectile.
Exactly.
So, okay, so let's move on to some of the stuff that you've prepared
sure.
today. So, yeah, what?
Okay. Oh, all right.
Shoot. And go.
Well, so since this is a foraging podcast, you know, I felt it would be a really good idea to kind of relate where we are.
Hell yeah.
In terms of how people view, like, the Chicago suburbs and the connection to nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, growing up in the suburbs, a lot of people have this idea that Illinois is flat, boring, kind of devoid of diversity in those natural spaces. But I mean, it could not be any further from the truth.
100%.
You know, granted, we were only at like, you know, what, a half to a tenth of a percent of the original prairies are here in the prairie state still.
Yeah. R.I.P. Bell Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was last year.
Yeah.
The point that I wanted to make was regarding insects, plants, and animal species. I mean, we've got diversity here rivaling the rainforests in South and Central America, which is, I think, shocking to most people.
Preach. Yeah, I think a lot of people don't even, it kind of like goes in, it's almost so unbelievable that it doesn't even register whenever people, they have to hear it a couple times. Because, I recently became aware of that fact like a couple years ago, and it was just like, but it kind of makes sense, you know, it's and people wonder why, like, I don't know, like we just had our honey locust episode and I've had a lot of anecdotal evidence from other people that say like, oh, it doesn't taste very good. And it's like, not only does it show an example of the diversity across the country, but the fact that it just like tastes so good here. Like we are in a prime area for biodiversity, plant foraging, old cultivation, just like stuff that's just like is just so good and that we've had a relationship with for a really long time. So bring it back.
It kind of really goes to show that, you know, I suppose as an effect, all of the farming here is a result of, you know, the most productive soils in the world, that deep, rich, organic prairie soils. It created just the perfect environment for this abundance of diversity and these unbelievable plant communities that, you know, you don't have anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, totally agree. I am a big Midwest or like Great Lakes hype man. So it's to hear somebody else on my side of the fence.
Yeah, you know, everyone likes to think, you know, Colorado and Washington and even New England and stuff. And granted, those places are beautiful, but, you know, growing up here, I think a lot of people have this sentiment of, oh, I want to go out west and like move somewhere else where there's something to see. But here, all it takes is for you to find that place that you really connect with.
I love Colorado so much.
Oh, yeah.
But we have more shit here. Yeah. Seriously. Like, no, you have mountains, but we have like so much stuff here. They have like dry mountains and like a couple cactuses here and there.
Right.
You know, but otherwise it's like.
We have cactuses here too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's something that we're like a echo chamber between me and you, because like I've been preaching a lot about like the biodiversity in the Chicago area. I have a prickly pear army at home where I'm like developing like all sorts of cold hardy cactus, try and reintroduce that into the Great Lakes area, because you don't find prickly pear anymore.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's some spots in Chicago proper that have like dunes. You'll be able to find them there. And there's some like observations on iNaturalist, but the populations are super dwindling. So yeah, sorry.
Couple of pricks over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cactus jokes.
Well, yeah. And I'll have to follow up with you on that, because I'm currently in the process of my wife and I just bought a house in Elgin, actually.
Congrats.
I'm in the process of converting the entire area to native plantings.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
The whole front yard is going to be prairie. And I've got kind of this dry area on the side that, I mean, just gets baked by the sun in the summer. So prime for cactuses.
Perfect. Perfect. Exactly. Yeah. Just
cactuses is correct. Just for all those who don't believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Cactuses is correct. We're speaking English, not Latin.
Oh, right. Cacti is incorrect. It's not both.
Well, they're both correct.
Okay, cool. Cool. Cool.
But for all the naysayers who say cactuses is not correct.
Keep your nays to yourself.
Yeah.
Suckers.
It's a horse-free zone.
That's right.
Right.
Damn it. That was good. Do you want to be on the podcast all the time?
Yeah, right.
Just like the three of us all the time.
Guess.
Just like fooling around.
Super solid.
So I was super, super, super pumped for you to come on, just because of like bridging that gap between foraging and conservation, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So it's super important, because if we want to still have these things, I have a young child. Miguel over here is getting ready to
I got a bow out on the way.
So, I mean, we want our kids to be able to experience all the badass things that we did. We want our kids to be able to throw mulberries and ruin each other's clothes, mm-hmm. right?
And if possible, more. And and there is room for them to experience more than we are, too.
Yeah.
You know? For it to not only conserve, but improve.
So conservation and foraging are huge, especially mm-hmm. when you get people that kind of cross the border between like, you shouldn't pick that because you're going to, there's not going to be any for your kids. You know, it's a fine line, and it's about, you know, knowing your area and knowing your populations of plants and whatnot. So I was super pumped for you to come on the show for that reason, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, that was one of the points I had written down is what I call the foraging rules of engagement.
Hell yeah.
Hmm.
For obvious reasons, you know, maybe a forest preserve would seem like a great place to find some more uncommon plants. And for obvious reasons, you know, we don't want to be negatively impacting public spaces.
Sure, of course.
For everyone, you know, we don't want to detract from someone else's experience.
Mm-hmm.
But a huge thing I think that people don't realize is in municipal management of public lands, they're using chemicals. And
sure.
You don't want to you don't want to be eating fruit that comes off of a plant that somebody sprayed glyphosate on or something like that.
Yeah, sure. Definitely not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and there's a lot of concern with like contaminants and spray. And fortunately, like within a few hours, a lot of those impacts are visible on the plant. You know, you'll see the obvious wilting. And if maybe that's an episode we should probably do, is like signs of contamination or because, you know, there's a few key things that are good to keep aware of. And on the upside side of that, I mean, you can still harvest like grapes and apples like right next to the road that have had all these like, you know, brake dust and like heavy metals in the soil and all that stuff.
Yeah.
There's been so many studies done that like the fruits of those bodies don't contain any of those toxins either. So it's like absolute, but glyphosate, like it's a little intense too. And you don't want to be eating any surface material that is so.
That's why it's important to wash all your fruit.
Yeah, yes. 100%. Yeah, even if you're foraging it, absolutely wash it. Yeah. So what kind of other things that like do you need to be aware of in like forest preserves? So it's like a lot of these places are built on like old sites too, right?
Well, a lot.
They're spraying glyphosate.
It depends. Some of the sites actually end up being like, so actually we're not too far from Lyman Woods right now in Downers Grove.
Sure.
Amazing forest preserve. It's one of my favorite places to go spot spring ephemerals.
Ooh.
I actually have one of my favorite site photos that I've taken is from there, and it's a carpet of trout lilies under a bunch of oak trees that haven't leafed out yet for the year. It's unreal.
Nice. Definition of ephemeral, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Lyman Woods actually was originally settled by this guy, Orange Lyman, like way back in the 1800s.
His first name was Orange?
It was.
Fun.
It was Orange.
It's pretty cool.
But the area was in the 80s, I want to say. It was in the process of being converted to a subdivision. And for whatever reason, it didn't stick, or the city voted to take the land or repurpose it, whatever. But now it's repurposed back into this amazing remnant oak savanna. They're doing wetland restoration there. It's really beautiful.
That's awesome, man.
Perfect.
I love a good trout lily.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, so not every forest reserve is necessarily like a historically significant location or a remnant property. It just happens maybe to be an area that's not suitable for building houses and nobody wanted to farm it anymore.
No.
Perfect. Have you ever eaten a trout lily?
No, I actually didn't know you could.
They taste like sweet beans.
They're so
sweet
good.
Beans. Like snow peas.
Okay. Oh, I was thinking like red bean, like in Asian.
Oh,
bean.
Yeah. Not no. Quite. Oh, that not would be, quite like that. That would be incredible. Way cool.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Snow peas. All right.
Go eat a bowl of trout lily flour.
Yeah. No, they're fun. I've eaten some of the tubers too, but you know, obviously only collect those in places where there are tons of other trout lilies because they are kind of a sensitive species.
True, true.
Yeah, so I consider myself very fortunate to have the opportunity to be able to collect plants like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I consider it to be a little bit guerrilla gardening.
Yeah.
The company I work for, we do a lot of single family home construction. These large custom builds, I call them estate homes, but I don't know that that's actually like a real term.
Sure.
So when I go to an area that I know is destined to get the bulldozer, if I see a conservative or desirable species there,
of course,
I tend to go back, you know, off the clock with a shovel in a box.
Heck yeah, man.
So at home, I've got everything from trilliums, trout lilies, bloodroot, some ferns, bluebells, like really kind of cool stuff.
A lot of work went into those trilliums, man.
Yeah, those are all some of my favorites.
Last year.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, there's been a lot of research done about ramps too that show that like, they can get a little too clustered, and that especially like redistributing them is a perfectly ecological way of, they do really well in transplants. So, yeah.
Well, that's promising. They were super wilty when I planted them. So
yeah,
fingers crossed.
Well, yeah, and there's a better time to do them too. Is like. Oh, well, that's just like plants.
I transplanted ramps before, and they came back until my chickens got to them. But like otherwise,
tail as old as time.
Apparently, we're not the only ones that like them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've done some work with like consulting for like food forests and stuff like that too, you mentioned?
Not in the terms of like a municipal food forest,
mm-hmm.
but where I do work with clients who, through their development, maybe not intentionally, but they're impacting a wetland area or protective buffers around the wetlands. They're required by typically county ordinance to reestablish a native community. And where it's possible, I reach out to the client and I'll ask them, you know, is there anything particular that you want me to take in consideration while I'm developing this planting plan? I can pick edible shrubs, things like that. Are you really into birds? We can pick a lot of things that birds will like. Are you a butterfly person, bees, whatever?
Cool.
So I have worked with some people who are really big on edible plants. So we'll end up using a lot of things like hazelnut shrubs and roses and things of that nature.
Wonderful. Nice. Roses, really? Like I wouldn't
consider... Yeah, the native roses, the rose hips.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, no, I just wouldn't consider them like first on the, like high on the list of like edible plants.
Well, no, but when you're planting in a specific area, you know, you're kind of constrained by the moisture content of the soil and shadiness and things like that. So,
too true. Too true. Yeah,
and what's commercially available.
Mm-hmm. So where do you get your plants from? You guys got like a nursery? You guys?
It varies. It's typically just up to the contractor. But,
sure.
Not a sponsor. A promotional shout out to Prairie Moon Nursery.
Ooh,
those people are awesome.
Prairie Moon.
They have.
Where's that at?
I think it's actually just over the border in Wisconsin.
Okay.
They do a consulting service. If you're trying to do native plantings at home, you can work with them, and they'll develop custom seed mixes, which is pretty cool.
Right on.
Incredible.
Yeah. Is there something you're looking forward to, like experiencing for the first time this year? Is there something you got your target on?
So this year we're going to be cutting down the magnolia in my front yard.
Ooh.
That I was telling you about. It was flushing mushrooms, oyster mushrooms.
Oh yeah.
So it's dead.
Yes, it is.
Actually with this big snow that just happened, we lost a huge branch. So it's time to just get rid of it.
Yeah.
So that's going to come down, and I'm going to be solarizing the front yard with tarps to kill off the grass.
Mm-hmm.
And in the fall, fingers crossed, assuming all the turf dies off, I'll be seeding all of that and have a nice prairie over the next
few years. I'm so excited for you, man. That's awesome. That's so fucking cool.
It seems like it's like that's the new tiny home, or that's like the new cool thing. Hopefully it's like getting trendy or whatever, is like
prairie lawns.
Yeah, like micro prairies. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Micro prairies. Exactly. Yeah. It's not like, I mean, everybody was so devastated seeing the Belleville prairie being bulldozed and everything. And it was like for, you know, just like a quicker route to an airport. It wasn't
even
necessary.
Yeah, they already had an access road. Yeah.
And so, you know, hopefully that means a little bit more. I mean, I wish it didn't have to take a tragedy like that. But, you know, the best thing that could come from it is the inspiration from a lot of people to create these micro prairies. And it's like, you know, that's not going to save the world, but it's little by little, it's going to help a lot.
Might.
But it might, honestly.
Yeah. You know,
who am I?
Have you seen Janine and Floyd Ketchpool's front yard? It's a prairie, and it's not huge. It's, you know, maybe an eighth of an acre, maybe. And it's like, it's badass. They do like burns and shit like that. It's
oh,
pretty,
wow, yeah.
It's pretty established. It's fucking cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we have a savannah, oak savannah remnant. We're trying to like bring back the prairie that was at our Homer Glenn nonprofit headquarters.
Oh, excellent.
That I helped manage. And we're only like 3 years in, I think, into the restoration project. And this year should be our first burning.
Yeah, you're really kind of cresting the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we couldn't do it last fall because it was like too wet or something. And so hopefully this year we'll manage to get that in. And it's just incredible seeing just the amount, the difference in just like 2 years, honestly.
Yeah.
Just how fast this all can happen. And one of the co-owners is very interested in the beautification part of it. And it's like, you know, I'm the edible part of it. They're the pretty part of it. And then, you know, we have a third person that is more the functionality, you know, the restoration, the seriousness of it all. And it's like, we're just kind of along for all, you know, all the fun stuff that happens along the way, like pretty flowers and tasty berries and all that. But it really is like such an important piece for everybody to be playing, hopefully, even if it is just like a couple square feet in the center or in the side of your yard or something. Not everybody can have like a couple acres and burn it every year, but
you can
have like a couple feet and burn. I mean, that's even easier to do like a little burn and kind of discreet.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I mean, even in like typical landscaping beds, you know, you can plant native plants in there, and there's a ton to choose from that are, you know, very presentable. They tend not to flop over. Like right now in my front yard, I've got Rattlesnake Master is in my landscaping bed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just an amazing ornamental.
Yeah, it almost looks Western, you know, like that it's supposed to be an agave or something like that, you know?
Yeah, it's trippy. Actually in the carrot family, which is super weird.
Mm. It's an Apiaceae?
Yeah.
What?
Unless I'm making that up. You know, I don't have the book in front of me, but if memory serves me correct,
yeah,
I think it is an Apiaceae.
I mean, I believe you. That's nuts.
We're in a library. We can figure this shit out.
We have the technology.
We are in the right place for that.
Yeah, or Google. Yeah, also that.
Hmm.
Sigh.
What's wrong, buddy?
Well, I just realized this mushroom supplement I bought isn't actually made with mushrooms. It's made with something called myceliated grain?
Myceliated grain?
Oh no!
I'm sorry to tell you, buddy, but myceliated grain is a sure sign of a poor quality mushroom supplement.
Well, dang. I wanted mushrooms, not brown rice. What should I do?
Well, you should support a small batch producer from right here in the Midwest, Keweenaw Apothecary.
Keweenaw Apothecary? Tell me more.
Keweenaw Apothecary specializes in high-quality mushroom extracts from Michigan, and they always use real mushrooms, never, never, never myceliated grain.
That sounds like exactly what I've been looking for. Where can I order?
Well, you can find them at keweenawapothecary.etsy.com. That's keweenawapothecary.etsy.com. Be sure to read their many excellent reviews.
Thanks, buddy. I don't want no low-quality mushroom products from a factory. I want Keweenaw Apothecary.
Wowie wow!
Wowie wow! We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's going to be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit, you're
welcome
a
scrumper. Welcome to the club.
You're welcome to a club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com.
Wowie wow!
Least favorite invasive species and why?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Can I give you a tie?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. For different reasons.
Sure.
Different reasons. One has to be buckthorn.
Fuck,
I mean,
buckthorn
alone is responsible for the decimation of forest understory plants in the Chicago region.
Mm-hmm.
During the coronavirus lockdown, I think it was the Cook County Forest Preserve. Or some like regional agency did a study documenting the tree cover by species in the Chicago area. And the three most common species were silver maple, buckthorn, and honey locust because of plantings.
Yeah, silver maple is a sleeper villain kind of.
Yeah.
Just because it's got the word maple in it, I think a lot of people don't take it as seriously. It's like silver maple and Norwegian maple, I think, are like two like really bad maples in my area where people like planted a line of it as like part of restoration. And then you just like look through the understory and it's just like all maple seedlings. It's just carpeted with maple seedlings. It's just got completely out of control in some places.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, maples being a later successional forest species, they evolved to grow in a shaded environment. So they won't even really outcompete each other. They just form these like dense stands of maple.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. It shows. So what's the tie? Is it a three-way tie or two-way tie?
No, just two-way. And so the other one is multiflora rose.
Ooh, yeah.
I have a personal vendetta against multiflora.
It's got a vendetta against anybody that walks by it, too,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. All too often, I'm at a job site, and when you're doing a wetland delineation, you flag the boundary of a wetland. And so you have to get, I mean, physically as close as possible to drop your flags. And then we locate it on a GPS to make maps for the project exhibits. And so, you know, many, many, too many times I find myself like entangled in these awful, like recurved thorns. And I mean, it's just a nightmare.
Recurved
experience.
Thorns. Yeah. I've never heard that terminology. Is that botanical or is
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So recurved is when they kind of have that backwards bend.
Oh,
to them
I call them like, shark fin thorns.
Yeah. Yeah. Denticles, you know, however you want to go about it.
Yeah. Right.
Versus, you know, a lot of the native roses are going to be a lot less thorny, or if they do have thorns, they're more like a straight out bristle kind of deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's so interesting because with like, you know, and this biodiversity in Chicago area isn't lost. It has been really, really damaged by buckthorn and multiflora rose. But like amongst that in the forest preserves that I visit, I'm still so lucky to be able to see like native rose species among those other invasives. So, I mean, they are still hanging out. They just need like a little bit of helping hand, you know, volunteer with your local forest preserve conservation societies, conservation foundations. We have the Heron around here and volunteer for like they have monthly get togethers where you can like meet other people that are interested in the same things as you and go down and commit some plant violence, man.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah
tear
yeah.
up those buckthorns.
Definitely.
So I admire the work that everybody does there, too.
Yeah, down with the woody invaders.
Yeah,
for sure.
Then the Carolina rose is the one that I've seen, and it's like a different, slightly different colored flower. I think they're pink flowers instead of white, like the multiflora rose.
Yeah, multiflora can have white and pink on the same even flower spike, not even just the same plant.
I've never seen pink multiflora. Is it like hybridizing, or is it?
That I don't know. The genetics is where I kind of separate myself from professional botany. You know, despite doing this for work, I consider myself an amateur in that sense because You know, genetics. It's the reason I went for an environmental studies degree in school instead of biological science.
That's all right.
The lab aspect is a little too brainy for me.
Yeah. Me too. It's all right.
So as far as I know, they're not hybridizing, but it also wouldn't surprise me. I mean, okay. They're close enough, you know, just like with the cattails.
Do you have a favorite tree?
Yeah, bur oak, hands down.
That's a good one.
Wow, fast. Yeah. So fast.
Uh-oh. Got quick, a tattoo?
Oh, yeah. There we go. That's the evidence.
Oh, beautiful.
Man.
Wow.
That's my scientific illustration.
Cool.
Shout out to Jeff, my neighbor. He did this one.
Hell yeah, Jeff.
He works
at a shop. It wasn't at his house.
Oh.
What shop does he work at?
So good. Yeah.
Top notch tattoo in Elgin.
Top notch tattoo. Shout out top notch.
Yeah. Might have to get a botanical to treat, done there because.
Yeah, the scientific illustration work, the black and gray. Really beautiful.
Yeah, that was really good.
Cool. I recently saw someone that had a like a pair of ginkgo leaves on their arm, similar spot, and I was like, "Fuck, that's a great idea." I'm always in the market for a new tattoo, but ginkgo doesn't. I mean, it doesn't really hold any personal significance. But that's a beautiful one. You know
why?
Well, I think primarily because of our region here in Chicago. You know, we call ourselves the Prairie State, but the Chicago region is actually a typical savanna habitat.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been more savanna originally than prairie. And I mean, you just can't beat like a mature, open-grown oak, and especially a bur oak with the big knobbly branches and just the huge crown spread and the low branches. It's just amazing.
Ooh, a good climbing tree.
Yeah.
Plus, cool. It's an oak, you know, like...
Oak.
Yeah.
Yeah, the state tree of Illinois.
Man. Absolutely,
oak.
Yeah.
Hey, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Not any kind of oak.
Oh, just oak.
Just oak.
Yeah.
They just kept it real general.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
They didn't want to commit.
Well, I do know, shout out Sharon Chung. I'm pretty sure that she put forth like a bill to change the state nut to the walnut. The black walnut.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that passed or not yet, but I'm pretty sure the state walnut or state nut is the black walnut.
Did we have a different nut?
No, I don't think we had one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Cool, right?
Yeah, that would be cool.
Definitely.
Hickory would be, I think, my vote.
You know,
love
me
a good
too.
Shag bark.
Yeah. Hickory to me is a better, I like it better as a food tree than black walnut, but that's just me. Black walnuts
I
are
think everybody
ubiquitous.
Agrees with you.
Yeah.
Not everybody, but like most people.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hickory? That's... Hickory nuts over black walnuts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't know. You know, JB's got some interesting work on the wild grocery that he compares a lot of wild black walnut flavor to blue cheese. And ever since he mentioned that, I've been like kind of looked at walnuts in a way different, funkier light. And I think I like them a lot more now.
Well, that makes sense. You see them like on a charcuterie board with those kind of funky cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
I always kind of related it to like molasses, but I think that's more of the husk on the outside.
Yeah.
I know you can make cookies
like
with
a
that.
Citrusy,
wait,
molasses-y.
What?
Yeah, the shell of the
you'd
walnut.
You use this shell to make food?
Yeah, yeah.
What?
Yeah, they can, and this is from, I went to school at Northern Illinois University, and so I volunteered in the greenhouse there, and the greenhouse technician, the lead technician there, I want to say it was his wife made black walnut cookies, and they kind of had this like molasses smell and taste to them.
Dang.
Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
Gonna have to make a note of that one.
Yeah, next year.
Research.
have you had any...
What? Is it this year?
This year. Oh, shit. Yeah, it's 2024, baby.
Yeah, right.
We're
oh
here. Yeah, you're having trouble. I am too, man.
We made it, guys.
I was writing 2023 on data forms like 2 hours ago at work.
<That's> solid week into February.
Yeah.
Have you had any acorn food product before?
No, I've not. I've known about it for a long time. I think I just attribute a lot of that to not having a source for acorns like readily available.
What about like a shag bark? Have you tasted there?
Yes. I've eaten shag bark hickory nuts. I've got a client that I was working with previously who has remnant oak savanna property, and through my company he had hired us to write restoration and management plans.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has these beautiful shag barks, I mean just straight up and down like a lodgepole.
Dang.
And so I took some nuts home.
Heck yeah, man.
Are you going to try and sprout them or are you just...
Oh, no, I ate them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's what I would have done.
Yeah, same. Yeah. I smelled, there's like a cold hardy pecan that the Morton Arboretum has, which apparently is kind of rare based on, well, what will be a soon to be released episode with a pecan grower out in Alabama. And he was like, yeah, there aren't really any good pecans that grow in the Chicago and like, you know, northern, they're not very cold tolerant.
Yeah, it's a southern Illinois kind of Kentucky species.
Sure. Yeah, well, there's this big freaking pecan at the Morton Arboretum, and I don't know what it is. But the Morton Arboretum.
It's the magicians over there.
I'm telling you, I didn't realize how legendary this place was until I start seeing it referenced, you know, just like in some of the craziest places. But I got a pecan from the tree there, and it was just like one of the most delicious, incredibly aromatic things just from the shell.
Wow.
Like it would just smell delicious. I didn't end up cracking it and eating it because I'm a sucker, but it smelled hella good. Do you have anything, any other like bits of advice or anything for like edible, like what's some of probably best plantings in general, or like what's like some easy good plants that people could really plus up a normal yard with that will add a lot of?
Yeah. Well, so I do a lot of wetlands work, so I tend to be more familiar with the wetland species
some
versus like an upland
places.
Kind of deal.
Okay.
But one of my personal favorites is mountain mint.
Yes.
Phenomenal plant. You're walking through a prairie, especially like a low spot.
Yeah.
And you just get this wonderful, like sweet mint aroma. And it's just, I mean, that combined with, I mean, typically like early morning, like wet plants in soil with mint, just unbeatable.
And it's delicious. The flowers are so cool.
Yeah.
I saw flower formations last year that were in like, they were crosses. Like they had like a long, and then they were like perpendicular flower forms or something. I was like so impressed by how they looked. I had to know what it was. And then I apparently hadn't seen mountain mint flowers like that before, because it was like, that was mountain mint. Like, I think they're awesome. Very, that's very
yeah,
fun to
me,
hear you.
Thinking about this flower structure now, it makes me wonder, you know, if they are a true mint in that sense. And then Lamiaceae.
Because they usually have
those flower spikes that go up.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't really looked too much at the petal and stamen arrangement.
Well, maybe I'm outing myself within a misidentification, but.
No,
like
they do have white flowers, and they're very minty. They have like a narrow little leaves. They're kind of almost like upright shrubby a little bit.
Oh, yeah. No, I found them growing next to like any retention ponds. They love like wet, like you say, kind of
super
wet
common
feet.
In like a restoration seed mix would be mountain mint.
So good. Makes a wonderful tea. Have you tried much mountain mint?
I haven't,
tea?
No.
We'll have to get that on your plate this year.
I love mint. Of mountains.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, there you go. Yeah.
Fucking win-win.
You're putting the Venn diagram together. It's really working out.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, yeah. So the last thing that I thought would be kind of good to talk about was planting at home. Obviously, people tend to have a landscape approach to it. You know, a lot of people end up not wanting to plant things like asters and goldenrods. You know, they get very tall in the fall, they flop over, and they just kind of have this unkept, like lazy look about it. Just, I mean, it looks like weeds, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So in the native plant markets, there are a lot of native cultivars referred to as nativars in the industry, or maybe outside too. I don't know too well. But the important thing to remember, if you're planting native plantings for the purposes of habitat benefits, you can use nativars and still meet that goal, but you want to avoid anything that either significantly alters the color, shape, or bloom time of a flower. So anything that's like a double bloom is not going to be able to provide the same amount of pollen and or nectar to a species. If the color of the flower is significantly different,
those
native pollinators are not going to recognize it as what they're looking for.
Heck yeah, man. That's
interesting.
Awesome.
That's a very important thing to consider. I think a lot about like scarlet bergamot. It's like Monarda fistulosa. And then there's like a cultivar that's red.
Yeah.
Like a deep, deep red.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing.
Is that kind of like a significant, because it goes just from like, is from pink to scarlet red a significant enough change?
Yeah. That
change?
Would be considered a significant difference.
Hmm.
So this is more of a rule of thumb, you know, in nature, there are very few like concrete hardline rules. But bees and pollinators tend to or well, bees and mosquitoes, I guess I would say, they tend to skew more towards blue and purple flowers, whereas you'll see a lot of birds, hummingbirds specifically, are attracted to red flowers. So like cardinal flower, awesome for hummingbirds, that scarlet red. They've got tubular shape, perfect for the long little beaks.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like co-evolution, kind of. It's a very good point.
Clover lawns, thoughts?
A monoculture is still a monoculture. That's how I feel about that.
If
you don't have to use a gas mower to maintain it, or if you're not applying chemicals, it's good for that reason.
Sure.
But in our area specifically, you know, the native clovers tend to be like, I don't even know if they're true clovers, like Dahlia, Candida, and Purpurea, and the bush clovers. They don't look like clovers that people think of normally.
Yeah.
But bees love it. You know, bees love a good white clover and a red clover.
Okay. That was very nuanced.
Well, you kind of have to be when you're talking about, planning for restoration and wildlife benefits.
Yeah, because there's always going to be like a set of pros and cons, and it's just a matter of trying to like weigh the pros as heavy as possible. I mean, I guess there's some stuff that doesn't have any cons, but...
Well, and to your point earlier that you were talking about where you're working with this nonprofit for restoration, you were saying you're there for like the edible benefits. And you've got another one who's there for the visual aspect, the appeal of these like flower meadows. But where I've seen this like lack of introduction of new species is kind of those insignificant flowers, the lower ground cover plants. People just overlook it, and they serve just as vital of a role as these like big showy purple and yellow flowers.
100%. Yeah, especially because a lot of the times that those plants are earlier on in the season too. So that kind of fits the description of like a lot of these ephemerals that only have the time before the tree canopies establish. They only have that short period to come out. What are some other plants that are kind of like in that example? It's one of the most underrated small
or maybe something
guys.
gets a bad rap, but
underrated and bad rap. That's a thinker.
Yeah.
That's a thinker. I mean, it doesn't really go with the like insignificant, but I will say goldenrod. I think people
love goldenrod.
People think of ragweed when they think of goldenrod. And yeah, I mean, just could not be further from the truth.
Huge common mistake. Yeah.
You can get some real nice showy goldenrods too that are not this like tall, floppy yellow beast.
That's another tasty one too.
Yeah, the most delicious one, I think, is like a very modest kind of waist tall plant. It doesn't have these huge blooms.
You find those in like woodland or prairie setting?
I think they're woodlands, like, or like trail sides. So maybe it would be more in prairie settings. I haven't really found the native one. I've found the Canadense, which is...
That's native too.
I guess I meant the tastier one. I can't remember what it's called. But I had brewery trying to get that specific goldenrod. They only wanted the one specific goldenrod that they said was the only one that tasted good. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure they all taste like freaking goldenrod.
So I was hoping I could ask you guys a question for input here.
Yeah. What's up?
Do you have a favorite forest preserve or like native land holding?
Oh, around here? For what? Like,
well, just to go visit or like if you want to, look at plants or whatever.
Well, we have this in common because I was creeping on your Instagram before this.
Do your research. That's good.
Starved Rock or Matheson over there.
Yeah.
Oh, Matheson is the hidden gem.
That's for sure.
Yeah. The black oak savannas. Yeah. The dry sandy stone. Just really cool.
Love it.
So still within Illinois borders, I'm going to reach out a little bit here, but, there's one right along the west. It's, on the Mississippi. I can't remember.
Palisades is over there.
Palisades. Yeah. Mississippi Palisades. I love the Palisades. That place was really inspirational to me. Like 8 years ago before I was really focusing on wild plants and just like, it was just a beautiful, beautiful place. Around here specifically, I already shouted out the Morton Arboretum. That is a little bit cost prohibitive to go, but it is like the best place to learn and experience nature at the same time. But if you can't be there, literally right next to it is a place called Hidden Lake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. That place has some back trails that run right up against the borders to the Morton Arboretum. Mm-hmm. So it's basically the same, you know, region. You know, you get same biodiversity of plants. There's tons of mushrooms, wild strawberries. It's beautiful. It's open. There's miles of trails.
Yeah.
So Hidden Lake is probably my number one place around here. Cool.
Excellent.
Any other questions?
Yeah, this is fun.
Yeah, this is fun. We don't get to be on this side very often.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, I just had the one question.
Okay, sorry. Cool.
It was a good one.
That was fun. Well, with that, I think we'll draw this to a close. Do you have social media you would appreciate people contacting you at, or do you want to prefer to stay DL?
Oh, no, that's fine. If anybody has questions about native plantings or restoration, my Instagram handle is Brad the Fisherman with a PH.
So Brad underscore the underscore
yeah,
PH
yeah.
Fisherman. Is it because of the band, right?
Yeah.
Because of the band.
Yeah, the best band in the world.
The best band in the world.
Allegedly. Subjectively.
So not Brad with a PH, okay?
Yeah. Cool, man. It's been really awesome to talk to you. It's been really cool.
This has been great.
Yeah. Want to hang out with you like...
Yeah,
not
let's
recording.
Do this all the time. Yeah,
yeah. Actually, I was planning on this summer, not in any formal sense, but doing like a guided nature tour.
Yes.
You know, I love going to actually, shockingly, for the first time this year, I went to a glacial park, like all the way up by Wonder Lake.
I haven't been there.
Yeah, I'm not familiar.
Oh, it's a huge kettle moraine complex.
Oh, yeah.
And there are prairie pothole wetlands where, when the last glaciers were receding, these huge chunks of ice broke off. And right where they sat, they depressed into the ground and melted. And there are these ponds that are still there.
Damn.
What?
How far is it?
That's so cool.
It's like right up by the Wisconsin border.
Let's go right
now.
So
not super far from here, but...
It's not that dark outside.
Yeah, right.
Can we come?
Yeah. Yeah, I went there 2 weeks ago. So we were actually like trudging through like a foot of snow. Which underrated, you know, if people don't take winter hikes, you got to do it once in a while.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
I love winter
snowshoes.
Hikes.
Yeah.
Well, I would have gotten them for here.
Yeah.
Actually, you can rent them out at, it's called the Lost Valley Visitor Center. They had snowshoes, but my friend and I that I was there with at the time, we kind of looked at the snowshoes and we were like, I mean, it's a forest preserve. Like, they have trails. Like, surely we'll be okay as we're like getting passed by cross-country skiers and snowmobiles.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, it was rough for sure. We definitely... headed down a few trails and like took a few steps and realized like we have to go back.
This was a mistake.
Yeah.
So people should be like, you want to do some like walks and stuff, you said?
Yeah, that would be so cool.
Doing some public walks to like talk about the history of the land there. So like, what do you plan on talking about?
Yeah, so I'm really huge recently into like landforms and geology and how that intermixes with like the plant communities that are developing. One specific really awesome example is the John Deere Forest Preserve in St. Charles. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar.
No, I'm not.
It used to actually be, well, several things. In the mid-1800s, it was a campsite for the American Army during the Black Hawk War of 1812. Hmm. The remnant campsite, there's like still minor features from that. And there's actually a soldier burial site there. Then it was a gravel mine for a while. And so there you can go see native cactuses.
Oh, I've heard of that. The bunkers, because they have like, they buried all the bunkers in sand, right?
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is. What's it called again?
John Deere Forest Preserve. It's right on like, it's like the S bend of the Fox River between South Elgin and St. Charles.
Cool.
The Prairie Path bike trail cuts right through it. There's an old train bridge there. Super cool.
Nice.
And the Fox River Trolley Museum is there. So they have these old, like, historical trolleys. They run on this, like, tiny stretch of train line. You can just hop on and go back and forth down the river. It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. That sounds
right
great.
On.
Man, I'm so excited.
All right, so we're doing a date, right?
Yeah.
We're all going to go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we're cool. Totally doing it.
Well, it's been, Brett, it's been real. Steve, always real.
Thanks, Mike.
You guys should check out our podcast or our hot sauce. Check out our merch store. We don't pay our guests, but we do supply them with one bottle of our most recently foraged hot sauce.
You pay in good times and thought-provoking questions. Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, hopefully, because we're rich in those.
Yeah, right, exactly. Hopefully you feel rewarded. So yeah.
Yeah, maybe we could do a podcast from the field one day.
Yes. 100%. We've been talking about
that. Yeah, absolutely. No, we try to do that. We have the equipment to take it to be hyper portable with it. Sweet. So
well, and so, you know, I do a lot of work with forest preserves, so I kind of have like the inside scoop on all the spots.
That's awesome.
Well, we'll be in touch.
Yeah,
we'll definitely try to get some cool, like, yeah, outdoor, like, really lean into the outdoor style of our episodes in the summer. So we'll be happy to have you along for the ride, Brad. It's been awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, guys. We love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Wowie, wow. We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's going to be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit... You're
welcome
a
to the club.
You're welcome to a club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com. Wowie, wow.